Everyone hits a bump in the road. What do you do with it? Be inspired as we explore the ways people experience, navigate, and manage the ups and downs and twists and turns in this road trip called life. Welcome to another episode of Bump in the Road. The basic podcast is always free. We also have a premium subscription called Bump 2 that lets you listen in on extended behind-the-scenes conversations with our guests. Check it out at www.bumpintheroad.us. Mary Neal is an orthopedic surgeon. She trained at UCLA and ran the Spine Center at USC. She and her husband currently live in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. In addition to an impressive career, Mary Neal is perhaps best known for her near-death experience, or NDE. Kayaking in Chile, she was pinned underwater for 30 minutes, and she died. Her near-death experience has been chronicled in the Netflix series Surviving Death and in her two books, Seven Lessons from Heaven and To Heaven and Back. On this Bump in the Road, Mary shares her story and the shift from a strictly scientific paradigm to a life that values, honors, and celebrates the experiential reality of a near-death experience. Mary, thank you very, very much for being on Bump in the Road. If you would, give our audience a little bit of background on your story.
Sure. First of all, thank you for the privilege of being on your podcast and sharing my experiences with other people. But as background, I am an orthopedic spine surgeon. I would say I was a nominal Christian before I had the experience I'm about to describe. And when I say that, I mean, you know, that I was raised in the Midwest of America, and like most good Midwestern young people, I was taken to church on Sunday morning, and then, you know, Monday morning, I went back to my life. And there was never a sense of integration or, gee, how can this actually help you lead a joy-filled life? It just wasn't that kind of a thing. It was basically a routine. And when I went off to college and medical school, I absolutely bought into the concept that you had to choose between science and spirituality because the two could not coexist. And I am a scientist. I've always been a scientist. I have a very analytical, somewhat skeptical, and I might add a little bit cynical sort of brain. And so I was fully committed to science and the intellect over any sense of faith or spirituality. Although I will say that during that time, as I look back on it, there were a number of things that happened in my life that I would now look back at and say, gee, that really was sort of God knocking on my door again and again and again and trying to get my attention, which I'm good at ignoring. But then, you know, I finished medical school. I went through my surgical training and I became a spine surgeon, and I ran the spine service at the University of Southern California. And I was married. I had four young children, and I did take my own kids to church. And I think I took them to church primarily as a way to give them a moral foundation. Again, I don't think I had really made the connection yet that, gee, this could actually be a way of life. But then my husband and I went to Chile in South America to go kayaking. And kayaking is something that we have done for many, many years. And at that point, we had kayaked all around the United States. We had kayaked internationally. And we had friends who are professional boaters. They own a raft and kayak company. And they ran kayak trips to Chile every winter. And so for my husband's birthday, I decided that we would go down for a week and kayak. And, you know, that was a pretty amazing experience considering we had four little kids. You know, it's a wonderful thing to be able to have a little time together. So we went and we had a wonderful week. And what was going to be our last day anyway, we decided to paddle on a section of river that's well known for its waterfalls. And although I'm going to call them waterfalls, they're not, you know, it's not Niagara Falls or something like that. They're drops of 10 to 15 feet, which for an experienced kayaker is fun and challenging and exhilarating, but it's not crazy. I mean, it was certainly within our skill set and not something that, you know, was out there. And so we put on the river, and actually my husband that morning, for the first and only time in his life, had an experience of horrible back pain. So he actually did not go on the river with us that day, but he dropped us off at the beginning and we started down the river and went over the first couple drops and that was fine. We came to the first more significant drop, and because it was early, we decided to go over sort of a smaller part of the waterfall or a smaller chute. And this river, unlike many of the rivers in the U.S., was very high flow, and the topography was such that there weren't eddies or areas of slow water where you could sort of pull out and regroup or change your plan. And so I started down the river, and there was another American client who sort of bobbled past me, and her boat ended up sideways in the drop that we were going to go over. And so my option was only to veer away from that, because that's definitely a problem when there's a strainer in the river. And in veering away, then I was swept over the main part of the waterfall, or directed over it. And as I looked at the bottom, I mean, I could tell that it was not going to be fun. But what I thought would happen is that I would hit the bottom, be flipped upside down, probably not be able to right myself because of the turbulence and the hydraulics. But I assumed that I would push myself out of my kayak and be sort of tumbled around for a couple of minutes before being spit out downstream. But instead, what happened was nothing I could ever in my wildest imagination come up with. My boat went down and became stuck or pinned in the underwater features and the rocks. And the boat and I were then immediately, we were immediately buried under 8 to 10 feet of water. And I am a spine surgeon. I'm not sure that I relish high stress situations, but I'm very comfortable with them. So I didn't panic or anything like that. In addition to which, I am an absolute water person. I love the water. I've grown up in the water. A good day to me is doing anything in or on the water. But I will also say that I had a lifetime fear of drowning. At that point, I thought that drowning would be the most horrible way to die ever. And there I was drowning. And the irony of it was not lost on me. And I am very pragmatic. I knew my predicament. I knew the likelihood of rescue was very slim. And I thought about my options. And at that point, the only thing that came over me was really a very sincere request, desire, prayer that God's will be done. And I know that that sounds like a very passive thing, like, oh, well, you're going to die. So like, okay, you know, give your life over to God. But it wasn't that. And I don't know how to verbally express the difference, but it was a very active choice that, yes, God, your will be done. And I am totally on board with whatever that outcome is. And the minute I asked that, I was immediately overcome with a very physical sensation of being held and comforted and reassured by Christ that everything would be fine. And I was so shocked. I mean, I was no Christian zealot. And I sort of was thinking, you know, I'm like I said, I'm pretty skeptical. And I'm a little thought balloon off to the side thinking, whoa, this is really not what you expected. But I was so overcome with love. It was nothing I could ever express in our vocabulary. And then I was taken through a life review that, again, was absolutely nothing I could have imagined. I have to say that at that point in my life, I had not known anyone who had died personally. Of course, I had had patients in my training and my practice who had died, but I hadn't personally known anyone, you know, no relatives, friends. And like most people, until I had to face the idea of death, I never really gave it much thought. I certainly never thought about what would happen after death. I mean, I think based on my childhood upbringing, I hope there was something more, you know, whatever that means, but I had never thought about it specifically. And if someone had asked me about the life review, I absolutely would have come up with the Hollywood version, you know, where your life flashes across the sky and, you know, you feel great about some things and then others, you know, you feel not so good and maybe have a little empathy or something. But this life review had nothing to do with any of the destructive emotions, guilt, remorse, regret, anything like that. And it had everything to do with understanding and grace. And grace is the only word I can really use because it's everything having to do with love. Because what happened is, you know, like all the most horrible, painful, miserable events in my life were the ones that went across the sky, not the good ones. And Christ would sort of reach out to one and we would be re-immersed in it. And it was amazing because not only were we re-immersed in the event that for whatever reason was one of the horrible ones in my life. And it's not that I just understood me in that situation, but I understood everything about my past story, my life story that led me to that moment in time, and everything in the life story of the other people involved. And I had this absolute understanding of how that particular event came to be, sort of what it was that brought each of us to that point in time when either I hurt someone else, they hurt me, they hurt someone I loved, you know, that whole deal. And what I discovered is that it was not a matter of forgiving. Like I didn't consciously think, oh gosh, I understand. And so now I forgive. What I discovered is that when you understand, there is no destructive emotion. It is just that space is filled only with love and compassion and empathy. And it's not a conscious thing. And it's, you know, I've spent a lot of time thinking about it since, and it's an experience that we all have. You know, we can all look back at our lives and, you know, see the times that we've been misunderstood or see the times when we misjudge someone else, but once we got to know them, we understood. And whatever negative, destructive feeling we had toward that person in the past is replaced with compassion. And compassion, you know, is a form of love. And it's then easy to express kindness to them and demonstrate love. So it was really remarkable. I mean, not something I would have ever imagined, and in and of itself was absolutely life-changing for me because it gave me a very different understanding of people and human interactions. And, you know, that old saying, you know, that, you know, hurtful words or actions come from a place of pain. You know, that's very trite to say, but it's true. And if you could only know, I mean, we can't know other people's backstories. We don't even know our own. Yeah, I mean, rarely do we know our own. But if we could, we would feel empathy and compassion and love. And so it's changed my human interaction because I can intellectually know that that is true, even though I know that I can't know what the story is. I mean, it's that old thing of like when someone cuts you off in traffic, maybe they really are going to the emergency room. But anyway, so it was this remarkable thing. And I was still me, the perhaps a better me, but still me. And I was still my pragmatic questioning self. And so I would take a minute and sort of say, okay, this is really great and amazing, but it must be some bizarre hallucination. And I would think about okay, do I have an air pocket? Am I breathing? Am I still conscious? Am I unconscious? And I would sort of run through this whole self-assessment exam and say, no, you know, I think about my breathing. I go, no, you know, I'm really not breathing. I mean, it's water. I mean, at a certain point, I sort of felt like I was a manta ray or something, like really beautifully intertwined with the water. It was a wonderful feeling. But each time I came to the conclusion that no, wow, like I'm still not just conscious, but I am more conscious. I am not, you know, I'm not alive, but I am more alive. And I never had the sensation of dying or the sensation of losing consciousness, that sort of thing. And there was this incredible shift in time. And I mean, there was no sense of the past or the present. It was entirely all about the moment. And I don't really know how to verbalize that. But anyway, at a certain point then, the current was pulling my body over the front deck of the boat, and I could feel my knees bend backwards and the bones break and all sorts of things like that. And eventually my spirit broke free from my body, and I rose up and out of the river and was greeted by a group of, you know, somethings, I don't know, people, spirits, beings. Those names mean different things to different people, so I never really know what to call them. I mean, for me, they had a three-dimensionality in terms of head, arms, legs, that sort of thing. But it also, there's no way to describe them with our vocabulary either, because they were wearing these pearlescent robes that were woven together with fibers of love. And I know that that's not a, you know, a visual descriptor in our language, but that's what it was. And they radiated such pure and complete love, acceptance, and joy. I mean, they were overjoyed to welcome me and greet me and love me. And I knew that I'd known them as long as I've existed. As I said, I didn't personally know anyone who had died at that point. So I didn't recognize any of these people as, you know, gee, that's my grandmother or someone. But I knew that they were people who had been important in my life story. So for perhaps a, you know, a grandparent who died before I was born or something. And they started to take me down this pathway toward this incredible domed structure of sorts. I don't know how to describe it. This pathway sort of existed in the middle of nothingness, and it was woven together with every color of the universe and colors that I've never seen. And these colors, again, I think because there was a time and space was different, so that I could experience these colors all at the same time, but they didn't mix together. It was simultaneous purity of color, purity of these thousands and thousands of flowers and the aromas of flowers. And I could not only see and appreciate each one individually, but I could hear them and taste them and understand them. And I don't know, I mean, it all sounds pretty crazy, but it was something that spoke to me. And I absolutely believe that God speaks to each of us in the way that we will understand, and presents to each of us at the time of our death the experience that we will understand, that will speak to us, that will make us feel loved, make us feel like we're home. And that was my overwhelming experience and feeling, which is that I'm home. I'm in my real home, my true home. It's like I've been on this incredible adventure to Earth, and now I'm home. It's no different than, you know, going on an amazing around the world adventure, and then you come back to your hometown and sleep in your own bed. I mean, it's this wonderful returning home. And these people were just greeting me after this long journey. So we went down this pathway, and, you know, this pathway to me spoke beauty, because if I had heard beautiful music, I mean, I can't sing and I can't play an instrument. And although I appreciate music, that's not what truly moves my soul. So this was, it was the most beautiful thing I could ever, ever imagine experiencing. I mean, it could bring tears to my eyes now if I thought about it too much. But then we eventually got to the end of this pathway and we're at this archway for what seemed like many, many hours. And while I was there, I kind of had the sense that I understood everything. I understood quantum physics, which I don't understand. You know, all I had to do was think about something and I could understand it. I understood not the divine nature of God, but I definitely understood the divine order of our universe, how we are all interconnected, how every action makes a difference. Every human interaction, every interaction with everything, I mean, plants, animals, people, everything we do and say actually matters. And I kind of knew that was a point of no return. And I kind of kept trying to go over the threshold. And eventually, one of the people, or, you know, whatever you want to call them, who had taken me there, told me it wasn't my time. I had more work to do on Earth and I had to go back to my body. And so, so I objected. I mean, I had been initially reassured by Christ that everything would be fine. My husband would be fine. My kids would be fine, regardless of whether I lived or died. And, you know, it's hard. I mean, it's hard for me to acknowledge that I didn't actually want to come back because I had a great life. I mean, I had a great childhood. I had a wonderful life. I still have a wonderful life. I had every reason in the world to desperately want to come back. But when juxtaposed to the purity and intensity of God's love and the love of our home, I said, no, you know, my journey's over. I'm here to stay. But, you know, I was kicked out. And so I was taken back down the pathway. But before I was, when I objected, I was given sort of a laundry list of expectations or a laundry list of things that I had to do. And, you know, I'm a very concrete thinking person. So many people have said, oh, it was like an impression or, you know, you thought about things. It was, no, it was basically, okay, Mary Neal, here's a list. Like, now scram, you know? And, you know, one of the most challenging things certainly was being told about the coming and unexpected death of my oldest son, who at the time was only 9. And when I was told about that, I asked the obvious question, you know, which is why? You know, why my son? And when I asked that, I was immediately returned to my life review, where I had, in addition to be shown, you know, taught about love and grace, I had been shown again and again and again the truth in God's promise that beauty comes of all things. Because in every single one of the painful experiences that I re-experienced during my life review, I was also given this incredible opportunity to see the changes that occurred when looked at that event from, you know, 25, 30, 35 times removed. And again, I was shown that beauty really does come of all things. And so I was taken back to my life review and reminded of that and reminded that it is a matter of trust because we don't get that opportunity to look into the future and say, oh yeah, this is going to be really great in the future. But again, it's an experience we all have. We can all look back at our life and see something that at the time was terrible. It was disappointing. It was a setback. It was heartbreaking, whatever. But as we look back on it, you know, years later, we're grateful for it because, you know, losing one job set us up to be available for a better job or, you know, something. I mean, there's a whole list of things. And with that, then I was taken back down the path and reunited with my body. And it's a long story from there to coming back to Wyoming for medical care. And we can get into it if you want, but it's a long story filled with miracles. And then I was back in Wyoming. I was in the ICU for, like 4 or 5 weeks, had many surgeries, all sorts of miracles happened in the ICU. And had a couple more out-of-body experiences where I believe I was back in what I'm going to call heaven. And I don't care what you call it, heaven, God's world, whatever. It's irrelevant what you call it. But I was back in that place where we go that is so filled with love and purity.
Thank you for joining us today. I hope you found something in today's podcast that inspires you along your own life's path, because sometimes a bump in the road is actually a portal into a more conscious and meaningful life. You can subscribe to our free podcast at www.bumpintheroad.us or become a premium member to hear the full conversation. Just go to www.bumpintheroad.us for more information and to sign up.